Hello, everybody. Thanks for listening to Shop Talk Show. This week, we have two awesome sponsors. One, our longtime sponsor, Environments for Humans. They have an awesome conference coming up this February in Orlando, Florida, called In Control Conference. Get there at 2013.incontrolconference.com. We'll tell you a little bit about that later in our show. And also, Harvest, time tracking and invoicing for anybody that needs to do those things, which is a lot of you. Go to getharvest.com, and we'll tell you more about that later in the show, too. But for now, let's kick things off.
Hey, dear listener, you know what time it is. It's Shop Talk Show time. I'm your Dave Rupert, and with me is Chris Coyer.
Hi, everybody.
And Chris, you want to introduce our wonderful
guest
today?
Yeah, we have we've been friends for a while now, haven't we? One time, Stephanie Sullivan, thanks for joining us, Stephanie. And Stephanie Sullivan Ruiz, I'm sorry.
Ah, perfect.
I screwed it up again.
It's okay, you're forgiven.
Once shaved my head into a mohawk. That was pretty cool.
It was. It was awesome. And I did Nicole Sullivan's makeup at that same party.
Yeah. Wow. Quite the day. And I'm sitting in that same house now out in California. But where do you live? Phoenix, right?
Phoenix, Arizona. Yep. Yeah, I'm in my office in Scottsdale right now.
Scottsdale.
Yes.
In your office where?
At Contada.
Yeah. Okay. So we talked about it briefly before the show, but it's a like pre-launch CRM. So you're doing it like hardcore startup style.
Oh, dude, so much. Yeah. I started here in March. You know, I had my own business for 12 years and did a lot of, you know, training and speaking and front end development and all the good things. And then I got contacted by them to come on board as a kind of a contract position. And after we talked about what they were doing, I was so excited by the whole prospect that I went full time, which I never thought I would do. So I'm the VP of Interface Architecture. What that has meant is I've been doing all the CSS and HTML architecture and building. And now we have just added several new developers. We're taking our prototype app that we've built and we're changing it to a single page application now. So I get the opportunity to start over with the architecture with everything I know now because we've iterated so much. And so yeah. It's really freaking awesome. Yeah, we've got a great team and I am moving it to, you know, OOCSS, SMAX, BEM kind of principles and really doing it the way we can make it scalable and modular. And yeah. So
those
that
are
we
like
have
key words at Shop Talk.
Yes, baby. And and I might add the reason I was so excited is Pat Sullivan is our CEO and he's the guy that did ACT way back in the 80s and then he did Sales Logics in the 90s and now we're taking CRM to a place it's never been before. So I'll be very excited to reveal it later.
I wanted to ask you, so you're working on a CRM. That's a pretty cool thing just because most CRMs are like hideous and horrible and terrible. So yes. That has to be a pretty awesome adventure to kind of rethink and redo the CRM, huh?
It really has been. I was one of the only people when I was hired that didn't come from a background of CRM. So for me, it was like, what are these terms these people are using, you know? And I got it down now. But yes, looking at what has been done and the way things work now and the pain points, you know, we're going to the cloud, to a single page app. We have an amazing back-end architecture, front-end architecture. We're going to be using a customized version of Dojo to run the front-end. And we're integrating a person's entire life, basically, into the CRM. That's the best way I can say it. You know, a modern approach to how do people work today. And we're able to architect it from scratch. Therefore, it's not like tacking things on to an existing CRM. We're actually, you know, building the entire thing. And it is really getting people excited in high places right now. And I can't talk about that, but there's some pretty cool stuff happening right now. So it's getting a lot of attention. Pat Sullivan, I mean, that was the fact that he was behind it gave me a lot of confidence in leaving my business and coming over to do this, because he really, I mean, he basically invented CRM, you know, he knows it. And then we have an amazing product designer who just, he's, we call him Michelangelo, you know, so he's designed this whole thing. It's all in his head. And then we get to iterate, and we have everybody we, you know, they've hired are just really top-notch people. So it's a really exciting place. I am really enjoying working with people. The same people, and not handing my work to an agency or a startup and watching it get mutilated. So it's really nice. And yes, we are getting a lot of accolades for our design, which, you know, in CRM is like, are you kidding? Yeah, they are so ugly. Cool. Yeah. Yeah. So it's really cool. And I will say, you know, even for people not in sales, like we're going to full company communication. So, you know, even people not in sales, when I saw what we were doing, I was like, oh my God, I would use this myself just to run my life, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's pretty sweet.
Yeah, welcome to the land of, you know, because it's, I mean, it must be a little different being kind of in training and teaching and stuff for so long. Not that you didn't build websites during that time, so I'm sure you did, but it's different.
Oh,
when you,
I did.
Our full-time on one large-scale project.
Sadly, I was full-time building all the time, and on top of that, I was putting in the training and speaking and writing. You know, I built the HTML version of the Tron movie website, and I built the HTML version of like Brian Wilson's beard, the cute little thing that, you know, they went out where you explored his beard. So I got to, you know, I built some cool startups. I got to do some cool projects, but nothing I could ever stay on and refactor and make it better and better. And, you know, so that's been the really fun piece. Yeah.
There's a special joy in going over code you wrote like even a month ago or like 2 weeks ago.
Oh yeah.
And you're just like, ha,
what
ha, ha.
I was thinking?
Yeah. I'm stupid. This is
especially
not good.
When it's a year old.
Yeah. It's just embarrassing. Yeah.
Year old code is even frightening.
Well, cool. Chris, do we want to keep driving or what do you think?
Yeah, we're going to try to get to the Q&A as fast as we can here. We normally have a hot drama section, hashtag hot drama, to cover. It's pretty light on like industry wide drama this week, but two days ago, I posted on just that kind of age old kind of debate on just main navigation on sites and just, you know, just forever, pretty much every tutorial that you read or template that you download or anything friend that you have marks up navigation as an unordered list, right? How long have we been doing that? Forever, right?
Yeah,
absolutely.
And now there's a nav tag in HTML5, and a lot of times it has simplified the way that we write markup. But in the case of navigation, now we have that unordered list, and it's actually slightly more because now you have to take that unordered list and wrap it in a nav tag. Not that that's a big deal. There's a lot of facets to this, but I was starting to see more of just a nav tag with just links inside of it. And then there was this presentation done by this guy named Reinhard Stebner. And he was a guy that is completely blind and is a screen reader user and saying that he doesn't like navigation in lists. And he thinks it makes them too verbose in screen readers. And it's just easier to navigate a list of navigation that isn't in a list. And it like confused a lot of people, and you know, people are saying, well, you know, there's a lot of like fist waving in both sides of this. Is it better for screen readers to have navigation in lists or not? And I just made a little post about it, just kind of questioning the practice and thinking about it and kind of weighing both sides of that scale. And it really, there's just a ton of comments on here of developers' opinions and screen reader people and accessibility specialists. And it's a very long comment thread about such a very simple idea. And it's a, I would call it hashtag hot drama.
I found it fascinating. And yesterday it drove me. I was, you know, I installed like Chrome Vox just to try that out. It's a screen reader you can install just in your Chrome browser. And man, I'd spent like most of the day in a screen reader just driving around just to see what it, you know, just to have a little bit of empathy, I thought. And so, yeah, it's just kind of interesting, like, you know, what does this do? You know, we always kind of hypothesize about what screen readers do because, and they are all kind of different, but like, yeah, I don't know. It was interesting. I thought I was inspired by your hot
drama. When you go for a nav thing, Steph, do you just go for the unordered list right away every time?
I do. I really do. And in fact, I'm one of those horrible people that I use lists for other things as well. You know, I even use ordered lists in my forms.
Mm.
Ooh.
That might be the next round of drama there.
However, I will say, you know, thinking about the, you know, screen reader issue, you know, the reason I use an ordered list is because, okay, this form should be filled out in this order, right? This is, you know, if there were no CSS, if there was nothing, you would have your rows of your form and in the order that you put them in, blah, blah, blah. However, you know, if that's problematic, like he's saying, for navigation, there's not any big deal about putting a div in. You know, when you take your CSS away, those are block level. They're going to, you know, it's going to look like a list, if you will, the navigation. And if it sounds better in a screen reader, I'm not hardcore. I'm very pragmatic. I do things that I do because at the time I figured out what I was doing, it was best practices, you know, but I'm always looking at how those change. So when you see something and somebody that uses a screen reader says, this is annoying, well, dear God, why would we do it that way then?
That's exactly the point I was trying to make here, because the only evidence I had at the time was an actual screen reader user who was saying that this sucks.
Right.
So I post about
it. Versus, it's like an actual screen reader user versus like a blog post from 2007, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and you know, this week I've been looking at a lot of stuff about CSS performance, and you know, I was looking at trying to find some recent stuff about it, and it looks to me like Steve Souder's book is about the latest thing that, you know, everybody's still pointing to, and what is it, 2 or 3 years old? So, you know, we do that as an industry. We figure out the best way to do something, and then we all quote it and do it and pat each other on the back. And, you know, I think we do have to keep challenging ourselves. And that's one thing I love about Nicholas Gallagher, is that Nicholas has, it's like his life is about, oh, we do clear fix like this. Well, why? Let's look at, why do we do that? Let's look at, is there a better way nowadays to do that? You know, and then he came up with the little micro clear fix that I like so much better, you know. And yes, and somebody just mentioned Harry Roberts' article. Yes, Harry Roberts' article was the most recent thing I could find. It's excellent. But he does also point mostly to Steve's, you know, information. So, but, you know, we need those people in our industry that challenge us to look at why we do what they do. You know, I build things the way I build them, you know, because I've learned how to make something really solid and the least buggy using certain techniques, right? And with IE, you know, you always kind of had to think about that. So if you want to get to the end of a project and not have to just totally, you know, hack the IE crap, then you learn ways that you build, because there's probably 10 ways you can do the same thing, right? It's the front end, people. We can do it so many ways. So you find out what's structurally most sound. And then I suddenly hit me recently, I'm not sure I could explain to a new dev exactly why I do some of the things I do, because it's become, you know, integrated into my brain, because it was the thing that made IE 6, 7, whatever behave, and everyone else worked well with it too, so we do it that way, you know. And I think it's great to have somebody come shake up the list thing or shake up the clear fix or anything that makes all of us reconsider why we're doing what we're doing, and maybe maybe what we're doing is the best, but to look at that every now and then and go, okay, you know, is there now a better way? Browsers have progressed. And I don't even have to worry about IE6, so there.
Lucky.
So Chris Coyer, you were saying I'm not yet done with the whole list thing.
Oh, I'm just saying I'm going to post a wrap up of the kind of the good, fair points on both sides of the against list and for list thing. I'm not even going to say which side the scale is tipping yet, because I feel like it's still ambiguous. I'm worried a little bit about it because I'm not sure. I feel like a winner should be declared. But at the same time, for the simple fact that I don't want to say, oh, it's up for debate, just do what's comfortable for you, because that's tough. That's kind of like is global warming real or not? You know, when you do reporting like that, it makes it seem like that's up for debate. Well, all the science points to, no, this is not up for debate.
I would love to see Derek Featherstone weigh in on it, because he does a ton of accessibility work and has a blind guy that is an employee that tests everything, and he has done some great work. I would love to see, you know, what they think about this whole thing. Maybe we should point him to it.
Yeah,
sounds good. He's at Feather on Twitter.
That's fantastic. There's lots of accessibility professionals in here already, but I'd love to get him.
And you know, to me, that's what makes the debate get won, not us debating what's semantically correct and, you know, what we like to do.
I know, especially as a bunch of sighted people, too. You know, I'm way more interested in the people that actually use these.
Exactly.
Well, cool. That's about all the hot drama I can take, guys. we should move on. Chris, you have a link in here you wanted to point out.
Yeah, I'm trying to see where my mind was on it again. I can't remember why it's in here, so let's leave it alone for a moment.
We'll talk it better next time. Yeah. We'll talk it better, guys.
Yeah. Let's get into the Q&A portion of the show. We have one from Levi Perchik, who wants to know, do you use CSS3 selectors? I mean, in real client work, not just in fancy tricks or geek-oriented projects. And then how do you add support for IE8 users? So saying, I use CSS3 properties all the time, you know, something like gradient or whatever, and then provide a fallback, either naturally or through Modernizer or something. But I've avoided using CSS3 selectors because it seems like that's like a harder thing to provide a fallback for.
Yes, no. Okay. I do use them, but I use
them. What's an example of a CSS3 selector?
Well, you've got all your nth child stuff now, you know, and I do use that, but I use it, I like to call it smartly, like, you know, you don't want to write super complex selectors if you don't have to, you know, but, and also, there are things you can do, like IE8 did support first child, but doesn't support last child. So you could, you know, let's say one of the uses for first and last child is things like you've got a horizontal list of menu items, whatever, and you are margining one side to keep them apart. And instead of margining the right side so that you would have to say nth last child, you know, or last child margin zero, do first child. So like think through what is supported, because IE8 did some things. Think through what's supported and do it that way. You can use Selectivizer. That's a little JavaScript library for CSS3 selectors for IE. And it's really small. I think it's like, you know, 4K or something. I used that. I have used that quite a lot, actually. But it works with your JavaScript library that you have. So depending on if you use jQuery, Prototype, MooTools, Dojo, whatever, it will support the selectors that JavaScript library kind of allows it to support, if you will. So jQuery does not support nth last child, nth of type, nth last of type, those things, because jQuery selectors don't support that. So he can't force that support, you know, he can't polyfill it with this. So if you want that full support, you have to use something, you know, whatever selector you need. He has a little chart and you can look at that. But that is what I've done. I do use CSS3 selectors sparingly where needed. But, you know, if you do need that IE support, you can look at polyfilling with Selectivizer.
Yeah, that's good.
And Modernizer.
It's just a use your brain kind of situation, I'm sure.
I think that's mostly what front-end development is, isn't it?
Like, but if it's nth child even, nth child odd, because you're going to zebra stripe something, you could do that knowing that it's not the end of the world if it's not zebra striped. But if you're going to do like nth child float left, odd float right, or something that's very important to the structure of whatever it is you happen to be building, and if that doesn't work, that would be a big problem. That's something you're going to need to polyfill or just do something else.
Right. Absolutely. And that is a huge part of this whole, you know, we've got HTML5 and CSS3, even though neither one want the number, but we're going to call them that. And, you know, the whole way you use that in your current workflow, in your real sites now, is to know what, you know, look at what really matters. Everything doesn't have to look identical. I don't care if IE8 looks exact, you know, has rounded corners. I'm not going to use JavaScript to polyfill rounded corners for IE. And I hate IE filters, so they can be real performance hogs. So sometimes it's okay to say, hey, guess what? IE8, you know, prior to 9, it has a little different look. It's square. It's not as gorgeous. I reckon that the web isn't so pretty for those people on IE 7 and 8 anyway. So yeah. Let's face it, right? So, you know, it's, you know, use your brain, look at what matters to the experience, because that's always the most important. And, you know, and then polyfill what has to be there, and the rest of it, okay, just make sure it's usable, attractive, and, you know, don't try to make it exact. I'm really, really against that.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of the same topic, actually, Dave, do you have something to wrap up here?
Well, I was just going to say CSS3 selectors. I learned this on a project recently. CSS3 selectors and media queries have like the same parity, like they're supported, you know, they're all exist together. So if you're doing like responsive design, you know, chances are it'll support media queries. So there you go. But polyfilling for IE8, it's tough. Just.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Last of type and first of type and all those type ones might get you in trouble if you're relying on those for layout. But other than that, it should work.
Somebody was saying that on the Selectivizer site, he has listed jQuery 1.3 and 1.4 in the support chart of what is supported. And they feel like there's probably more that are supported now. But I was speaking at a conference a couple years ago with John Resig, and I asked him, why the heck do we not have this support in jQuery for these, you know, nth
last of
type, the nth of types? Yeah. And he said, oh, we used to, and we took it out. So it's not a matter of they're not going to put it in. He goes, nobody used it. Exactly. I was like, are you kidding me?
Well,
I don't think they have any plans to put it back. Maybe if people.
There's an easy way to put it back, though. It's just like they took it out because there's an easy way to put it back. You can just, there's a couple lines of code that you can add to because jQuery is extensible in so many ways that you can get that stuff back in there. That's weird that Selectivizer uses that as an excuse to not support them. You'd think that they would just.
Well, yeah. Well, they're not trying to polyfill the library itself. They're trying to utilize the library. So
right. I know, but
if,
still.
You know. I've never even heard of NW Matcher, and NW Matcher and MooTools, if you use either of those libraries, you can support everything. But I don't even know what NW Matcher is, to be honest.
Very cool.
Speaking of this type of thing, right? So we're in a world in which the people still need to use floats for layout for the most part, right? Are you using floats in your BEMI fancy redesign of?
Yes, no. Since we're going to a single page app using Dojo, there's like this thing that was highly offensive to me when I first saw it because of all the inline kind of code. And then I thought about it after I initially gagged, and then I went, okay, yeah. If you're building an actual application in the browser, right? This is different than a web page in the browser. We have a platform and APIs, and you know, this is an actual application in your browser. So there are things that will be done differently than they are done in a website that I would just build, you know. In a website I would just build, yes, I would use floats. But in this, the JavaScript actually looks at how much space is here, you know, this framing portion should always be here. Now we can let people, you know, drag things and pin them and drop them and, you know, move the size of things. So it really is an application in the browser. It sort of, yeah. The JavaScript has to do it. Yeah.
Okay. Bad example.
I know.
Let's say you're CSSTricks.com and there's a sidebar. We're probably in a world in which that sidebar is floated to be there.
Yeah,
that's just the world that we live in at the moment. That's going to change with Flexbox and grid layout soon-ish, year maybe.
Depends on how far back you have to support, right?
Being optimistic there, buddy.
Yeah.
I'm saying a year. Just wait. We'll see.
But Chris, if you've got to support IE8,
you don't.
It's not going to be gone in a year.
I already don't support IE8.
Oh, anyway. Okay, all right. But there are many. There are many people building corporate websites that do have to support IE8.
But I say a year for the point that where even something like CSS Tricks could use it because I'm not right. Because okay, whatever. Let's not have this discussion.
You can be
quite
cutting
yet.
Edge.
I can be right. But I can't. Right. I can't use new Flexbox now, even on CSS Tricks. We're not yet even to that point. I don't think.
Right.
At least with new Flexbox, although this is debatable because, and I know Paul's in here, so if you're listening, feel free to say something about that. Because we were talking about this at a party the other day about how if a browser supports old Flexbox, like the display blocks version of it, not the new display flex, it will probably never not support it, like ever, just because of that's how they roll. And old Flexbox had some good stuff-ish in it. Like the number one thing that you might want to do with Flexbox is make grids of or multiple columns of the same height. Really, really easy to do.
Please, yes.
That's so easy.
And vertical centering.
Yeah, an old like Flexbox can do that, right? So if you want to use Flexbox and you want to use the new one because it's so cool or whatever, but you could use old school Flexbox and get pretty good browser support now.
Right.
Anyway, and not worry about it being the new syntax or not. So that's interesting. That's where it's a blog post. But I'm
Have you tried mixing them, like putting the old syntax in first for the older browsers, and then putting the newer syntax following?
Right. Yes, yeah. But like, is there any browsers that support the new one that don't support the old one? I guess there will be. Maybe. Is there anything that didn't?
Well,
like
I don't know. Paul Irish just said basically 85% of layouts you can do in both new Flexbox and old simultaneously. Yeah, that's what I was just saying.
But if you're going to put the old syntax in and browsers will never not support the old one, why put the new one in at all?
Because the new one would then override. It's sort of like when they fix the WebKit border radius bug. So you want to have border radius as your final property, because if you put WebKit border radius as your final property, you will render the buggy one. So even if a browser supports both, if you put the old one first, it's going to use the new one.
Which is better, but also
which is better.
It works, right?
It is better. Trust me. I was messing around with the old one. I did a blog post about it. I was like really frustrated with some of the ways things were working, and then Tab Atkins pops in and goes, oh, just wait 2 weeks. I'm rewriting it. You're right. This is really kind of screwed up. I'm like, oh, cool. Cool.
Yeah.
Forget it.
And then there's that in-between stage too. There's display flex box. So really you'd have to write it kind of three syntaxes in there, but then it would work.
I'm not
going to
do that. Just, yeah.
Anyway. Oh yeah. I'm trying to segue into this. I just wanted to mention Flexbox because it's always an interesting topic and it is going to be awesome and save our lives someday. But
yes,
this question from Tim Smith, and I'm pretty sure this is like, dang, Tim Smith.
Here we go. I'll cue it up. Go ahead.
I've been using floats for grids.
Dang.
But I've heard some use display inline block. So we're going to take this conversation back a year or two. So we talked about floats and Flexbox. What is did anybody rock and roll I'm not going to use floats, I'm going to use display inline block. Did you ever go down that road? Because they're
I've done a lot with display inline block, but I tell you, it gets pretty frustrating because of, you know, there's so many weird little white space issues. That's kind of my biggest complaint. Otherwise, I like inline block and I use it a lot, but I don't use it for my grids.
You don't use it as a float replacement.
I use Nicole Sullivan's little OOCSS grids because they're really lightweight and simple and sturdy. So when I need them, I use those.
Cool. So what were the is there any recap? Do you even remember why people thought? Because they're basically they're better because you don't have to clear them.
Right. Yeah, right.
I think that's a big thing.
Right.
I messed around recently because I was like, hey, this could work for internationalization. If you say inline block, you can it'll basically auto flip the RTL, like LTR RTL. Which was like, I was like, this is awesome. The whole world should be doing this, but that white space bug killed it, really ruined the joy there. And, you know, and it's just as easy to do.
It's not really
like,
a bug, to be fair. It's just how they work.
It True. Is how it works, right.
There,
but, yeah. but the, like, the, you can just as easily with SAS or any other preprocessor, just do a RTL style sheet and an LTR style sheet, you know? Yeah. Like, you can just change the variable. So your float lefts now float right or
right,
something like
right.
that. So
I think we even mentioned on the show one time a pretty cool SAS thing for that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I can't remember it. I'll maybe look around here.
Usually the way around the display inline block bug, the cleanest way is just to font size zero the parent. And that way mm-hmm. that space is nothing. But the problem is if you're in M's land, which most of us
That's
are.
That's right.
It screws up your M's. Which is where yeah. REMs are cool and yada, yada. Okay, next.
And then when you're dealing with a lot of developers or a CMS or, you know, anything major, you can't really, you know, depend on butting the end of one tag up to the other one, you know, and little tricks like that. It's just not reliable. So.
Yeah. So I think, yeah, floats, man. We're still stuck there, but they're tried and true, that's for sure.
We at least know what the bugs about them are, which makes it a lot easier.
Indeed. And I think there's going to be a display inline block property in the future that deals with the white space thing. Have you heard
that
of that?
That would be great.
Yeah, it's like,
I have not.
Okay. Let's do a new question.
I've been sort of out of it, dude, since March when I started this.
Yeah,
this,
in a good way,
startup.
Right?
I mean, yeah, in a good way, but I really miss my friends on Twitter and stuff, you know, as silly as it sounds, coming from the woman who got engaged and married there. You know, I really miss Twitter as RSS feed. And, you know, sometimes I hardly get in there for a week and then I get back and people are talking about something that I haven't even heard about. And I'm like, oh, my God, I'm missing all the things. So, yeah, but head down, you know, 7 days a week almost is kind of where we're living right now.
Yeah. So speaking of 7 days, that sounds like an amount of time. If you need to,
if you need to
track an amount of time, you should use GitHarvest. So go to GitHarvest.com. It's all about time tracking and analyzing that time that you spend. Literally for the purpose of billing your client. So if you do client work, you should be, you know, if that's how you roll, which is a good way to roll, is bill them for the actual time that you deliver, just like your car mechanic does. And then invoice them for that time. Harvest does all that stuff for you with a very awesome interface. So go to getharvest.com. They have iPhone apps, you know, and all that, all the mobile-y stuff, which is good. So in case you do things like travel to them to have a meeting, you can track that time as well without having to have your laptop in front of you or whatever. And they have a Mac app as well. So you don't have to have a browser tab open all the time. You can just rock and roll from a menu bar app, which is nice. And I know I've mentioned this before, but I like that feature where you can't screw it up. You can't like walk away from your computer and leave your time tracker running because it will stop and it'll give you this cool little pop-up that's like, were you away from your computer like doing something for the client, in which case add that idle time to the timer, or where you did you just walk away and like go for a run or whatever, in which case
that's
remove
cool.
that time from the so
that's
yeah
very cool
GitHarvest. All right, let's do another question.
Cool. James Kusachi writes in and says, given the emerging technologies HTML, CSS3 for web design and animation, SVG Canvas, and tools to support them, Raphael, etc., where do you see the roles and interaction between designers and developers in the future heading? Current workflow has designers mainly designing in Photoshop, handing over assets to developers, sometimes Illustrator. But with the new technologies, there needs to be underlying code to support them. Will the designer's role have to start transitioning to raster and vector, be able to export and possibly hand off SVG Canvas code to a developer? Or will the developer role take on even more responsibility and have to code not only the design structure, but the actual design elements individually? I'd love to hear your thoughts. I'm all for using web technologies, but it seems at the current pace, web developers might be in for a real treat. Kind of what, you know, everything's moving very fast. And I think you mentioned this, Stephanie, this is, you know, is there, how do you see this designer developer relationship changing?
It's you know, the answer to that question is yes. it's gonna happen both ways.
Do you consider yourself a designer, more of a designer, more of a developer?
I am right in the middle.
Okay.
I did design when I first started out, you know, 14 years ago or whatever, and I quickly learned that not being a trained, you know, designer, and reading some books like the Non-Designer's Design Handbook or whatever that one is called, you know, I learned a lot of principles of design, but I would never really come up with that wow thing that I wanted to build. So I decided early on that I needed to specialize. And what I decided to specialize in is more of the visual part of the front end, which is the, you know, the CSS, you know, making the visual stuff with CSS. So while where I am now, I don't do the design. We have a designer that gave us the initial stuff. But then what happens is the product, the guy that's in charge of, you know, creating the product in his head and in Balsamiq, he does things in Balsamiq, and then he and I iterate in the browser. So I am designing, if you will, like we're changing the looks of things and we're doing it live in the browser, but I'm not using Photoshop. I'm not using Photoshop or Fireworks to do it. That said, I think it's really important for front-end developers nowadays to really work on their JavaScript chops. And that is something that, like we talked about earlier, you know, I was doing so much teaching and training and writing and speaking and also having to work full time that I used my husband as a crutch. I will admit it. You know, he's good at JavaScript. And I'd say, oh my God, I'm trying to get this job done. You know, can you please just do this little bit here? And he'd say, I'm only going to do it if you sit with me and I teach you. And because I'm just like, I can do some jQuery, you know, but I'm not like a strong JavaScripter. And I would say, no, right now I need you to do it while I'm doing this other thing. I got to hit this deadline, you know? So I really used him as a crutch, which was to my detriment. You know, I really think that people that do what we do really, I mean, everything is moving to such heavy JavaScript that, you know, the guy's question, you know, if you're going to be dealing with Canvas and SVG and things like that, I mean, you need to up your chops in JavaScript. So the biggest thing I would say is I don't think you have to know everything. Nobody can be good at everything and be really good at what they do. You know, and I do appreciate the fact that where I am, I get to concentrate on the CSS architecture because CSS is getting more complex and architecting big CSS, as Harry Roberts would call it, you know, is really a science in itself. So there's nothing wrong with us having like this JavaScript architect guy, and our JavaScript guy would do the CSS as well. I mean, he's used to doing that in his previous position, but, you know, where we are, I get to do that. So I'm architecting that. And we have these amazing server guys and backend architecture. There's nothing wrong with specializing. But if you are going to be a front-end developer that needs to fit into a team, you're probably going to have to do the JavaScript. And I don't believe a front-end developer has to design. I really don't. I think there are designers that need to understand code well enough to design for the web. But I don't think that they, a really good designer, I don't think that they have to be able to write amazing code, you know? And I don't think a really good developer has to be able to design, but they should understand alignment and contrast and certain design principles, right? But I think we can all work together. This web thing has gotten a bit complex, if you hadn't noticed. It's not just, get in your garage and build your business's website anymore. If you want to build a really performant, web application or whatever, you really need to be thinking about a lot of different things. And there are those Renaissance people that are good at everything, but they are few and far between.
Yeah. For me, this feels like the perfect argument for why shops and companies need a front end person, there's designer front end, back end kind of people, not even just designer developer. You almost need front end to do front end really well. I also feel like one thing that's happening in even in my work, the loop between designers and developers, me and my coworkers, is really short now. It used to be that waterfall, here you go, but now it's very much like, okay, I did this, it doesn't work. Okay, check this out. Okay, here, look at my build. Here, okay, cool. Let's do this. Let's try this, and then.
Right. So you're really kind of iterating as well.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. I agree.
And I was also going to say, this is very fresh on my mind. I went to a website the other day and it just had this little animation, it's clearly JavaScript, but it looked like Flash or whatever. But my CPU fans just turned on and my whole computer's like hissing, is it gonna explode or something? and I was just like, geez, what on earth did they do? And I'm like opening it up, and I mean, Paul Irish, he's been talking about using request animation frame and stuff like that. It's getting to the point, in my opinion, I'm very snobby, but that you need to really know performance and how to do that well. You can't just chuck an animation or something on an interaction, if you will, in quotes there, on a page. You need to know what you're doing with this toy. So
absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I had a blog post started probably 2 years ago, is the whole HTML5 thing heated up and kill Flash and, Flash is evil. And, to me, the whole thing is, your stuff is only as good as the designer that does it. Flash is horrible, it does all these terrible things. No, people that don't know how to do Flash properly do those things. Flash can be done well. It had its place, right? And Flex. So now we have, HTML5, and people are trying to do stupid things with that, just like they did with Flash. It's not the technology, it's the developer. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, whatever mm-hmm. you're doing, become the best at it. Like, constantly learn. Life is about learning. And in our business, you can never sit back. The next new thing comes out, and you've got to stay on top of it.
Indeed.
I think I'm going to redesign my website, and it's going to be a picture of a desk, and then my blog posts are going to be pieces of paper that you flick.
I did a site like that one time.
Everyone has, right? You get the coffee stain.
Yes.
BMP, right?
2002 or something.
Yeah, coffeestain.bmp. Heck yeah.
So James, who started this question, there'll always be people that are. I guess my answer to it is that, it's just so, well, let's say you get good at Canvas and SVG if you want to, but it's not like I'm a designer, so you better as heck know SVG and Canvas or whatever. I don't know. Right. I feel like I'm mincing my words or whatever, but if you get good at it, good, then you'll be good at those things and you'll be useful to people that do it. But just because if you're a good designer and you don't happen to know those technologies, you don't have to feel bad.
That's right. And, I think everybody should be, the part of the business you work in should be the part you're passionate about. Find something you love doing. If you're a designer and you got little by little into SVG or Canvas and you just thought it was, you know, coolest thing, then great, you know, go for it. I think that there's so much in our industry that you can get good at something and make a living on it.
Oh, amen. Well, you know, what kind of place on earth would you go to in which to learn about new fancy things? Would it like something like a conference? Would that be a good?
I would probably go to a swamp.
They got
a
fancy
city built on top of a swamp.
They got fancy boats there.
They do have fancy boats.
Chris,
there.
What are you getting at?
I'm just thinking that if you really like kind of want to get good at this web design thing, you know, going to conferences and like kind of, you know, connecting with the community is a good place to do that. One of those coming up is the Ink Control Conference in Orlando, Florida, coming up February 17th through 19th, 2013. Inkcontrolconference.com is the URL. Use coupon code SHOPTALK to save some money on it. Or try Escape Winter too. I keep saying that, but I keep meaning to ask Chris about which one is a better coupon to use. But Shop Talk will be the one that would get us credit
Shop
for
Talk
it.
Show.
Shop Talk Show.
Shop Talk Show.
And yeah. I will say that I think conferences are a great place to, you know, kind of get your feet wet in all the kinds of things that are happening right now to and make connections. And In Control, you guys, this is the first year I have not spoken there. Greg and I have been there since the beginning. It is one of my very, very favorite conferences. I love it. Is he still doing a single track this year, Chris?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's workshops before and then.
Right. And it's a single track. So you don't have three things that you have to choose between. And they set it up so that it sort of flows very naturally one thing to the next. I love that conference.
I do too.
Questioning themselves, they should go. It is really, really, really nice.
I know they're a sponsor of this one, but I said this long before they were ever a sponsor of this, is that I really like In Control. It's a really well done
company. I do too. Yes. Really well done. And, you know, and it's small enough that you really do meet a lot of people. It's not like one of those big, huge things that you sort of get lost in. It's really a good company.
Plus, me and Dave are going to be there.
That's Hello. Even better reason. I'm so bummed.
Go ahead.
Yes.
Can't make this one. We'll see you. You're busy building. I'll see, I'm sure.
Somebody just said conferences are to meet other people, and that is absolutely true. I mean, one of the best things you can do for your business is to network with other developers. Because, and you know, for those that are independent and not working at big companies, you know, the best thing I ever did for my business was to start going to conferences and meeting people. Because when you are looking to hire another contractor, what do you put something out and go, okay, I'm looking for, no, you think of who do I know that does this thing that I need? Mm-hmm. And you always start there, or you ask somebody, hey, do you know somebody that does this thing? You know, it's the best thing you can do for your business as a self-employed front-end developer is to go to conferences and start networking and then stay connected with those people via Twitter or something.
Good point.
Just say
that's it. Actually an excellent segue into the next question we have from John Locke. He says, hi, everyone. I know there's been quite a bit of advice for young designers breaking into the web industry lately. How would you approach getting a foothold in the web industry if you were not south of 20, but rather north of 35? Thanks very much. Love the show. Would your advice be the same? Like,
yes, it would be the same because I started into this business in my late 30s.
Wow. Okay.
Yes.
Cool.
And I had
so you're
not.
The perfect
yes.
Person to ask
I had not this. Done anything like. I had done a lot of different things in my life, none of which were anything remotely like this, and I only settled on it because I love to study the brain and how the brain works, and you know, and looked at when I was reentering the workforce, you know, after being home with my kids for a few years, and went, what does my brain like? It likes puzzle type thinking and research and detective work and. Maybe code is like that, you know? And so I did a career change late career change. But, you know, I think it's really the same for everybody. What do they say? It takes how many, 10,000 hours to master something, yeah, yeah. Something like that. But I do really believe that that is true. And the first year I did this, I did 15 hours a day. I did tutorials and built things and just anybody that would let me build, you know, try to build something for them. And, you know, so I stayed in my little hovel for like 3 years. I didn't go to a conference. I didn't have a picture anywhere. You know what I mean? I just like was in my world learning my stuff. And when, and another good thing is lists, you know, like lists about web design where you can ask people questions as you're learning. Because in truth, I started my business there accidentally. I found a list and I asked so many questions. I must have annoyed them so much. And then as I learned things, I started answering questions for people that were, you know, had been doing it less time than I had, or, oh, I know the answer to that one, whatever. And in doing that, little by little, it got to the point where I was answering most of the questions on the list. And then people that thought they were going to build their own website would write me off the list and say, oh my God, I thought I was going to do this for my business, but this is like way more complicated than I realized. How much would you charge me to do this? You know? So that's one thing, is that a way of kind of networking. And then, you know, then when I felt competent, I went to a conference. I felt like I could go out and say I did this, and then started meeting people. Really, life is about making connections and, you know, being at the top of your game. That one of my favorite quotes is, luck is when preparedness meets opportunity, and opportunity is everywhere. In other words, get your act together, you know, really know your stuff, be constantly learning, and when an opportunity presents itself, you are ready to take advantage of it. You don't have to go, yeah, I could do that. I could do that. You already know how to do it. So, you know, I would say the same thing for young people and older people, except that younger people can usually get by with making less money for a bit. They might not have as much responsibility. Yeah. So they can get by with like, I'm going to do this cool, free, open source, you know, they're not so worried about the paycheck as those of us in our late 30s, right? So
they're paying me in free food. Right? This is great.
I got a beer. Awesome. Right. So, you know, I think it is the same for all of us, you know, get involved in the community, give back to the community, ask questions, answer questions, network with people. That's how life works.
Yay. What a positive message.
Yeah, I mean, John, I hope that answers your question. I mean, I should have, exactly.
I'd make some joke about, like, once you get back from the island, I mean, but...
Yeah, we're leaving in 6 days to do 2.5 weeks in the BVIs on a 50-foot catamaran, so yeah.
Yay.
I work hard and I play hard. But we take people on it's Geeks for Sail, and we take people with us on the boat that are also tech people. And we have a little floating beer bar camp. I started to say beer camp. Bar camp, but with rum. And, yeah. And the CSS is the Caribbean Sun and Sand. You know, it could be worse. But I was going to say, somebody posted a question when we were talking about that and said, do you think that a degree matters in this time of age for the web design, web developing category? You know, that's sort of a yes, no. I don't think that the degree you would get in school is typically, the schools don't keep up to date because it's moving so quick and teachers teach so many things. It's really hard to find a place that you can learn stuff that is pertinent to what you'll really use when you get out. However, I will say that in our industry, if you want to go forward and be hired by, you know, a Microsoft or Adobe or, you know, companies in our industry, there are companies that say, do you have a degree? And if you don't, okay, they don't care if you're good. There are other companies that are like, degrees mean nothing. So, you know, you kind of have to make that choice on your own. Everything you want to learn in our industry is on the web, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know,
it could just simply depend on the hiring manager. Like,
that's right.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I haven't thought of it that way. That's crazy.
It is crazy. I lived in Wilmington, North Carolina, which is a little, 150,000 people by the beach in North Carolina. And they found out I was on the Dreamweaver task force for WASP and trying to help Adobe like clean that product up and make it right standards and all that. And they asked me, I don't know, I got involved with the community college somehow, and they wanted me to talk to them about CMS and blah, blah, blah. And then they found out all the stuff that I knew about Dreamweaver, and they said, oh, you could probably teach the Dreamweaver course. And I'm like, I probably could. I don't know that I would really want to, but, you know, I probably could. It probably wouldn't be that much money, but okay, maybe I'm giving back in some way. So the guy goes, oh, I'm going to put so-and-so in charge with you. And they contacted me, and they go, okay, so what's your degree in? We require that you have a degree in either business or computer science. I said, no. When I went to school, it was for biology, and, you know, I'm not doing anything remotely. Like, oh, yeah, sorry, we can't hire you. So though I might have been, I'm sure I was the most qualified person in that town to teach that, I could not teach because I did not have the business or computer science degree. So, yes, degrees sometimes matter.
Great word of advice, yeah. Chris, what do you think? One more?
Absolutely.
Should we wrap it up? I'm trying to find
Yeah, you
one.
Pick.
Chris, you pick
Oh, okay,
one.
I will. I'm trying to find one. Just,
okay, here, I'll, we've mentioned some tools already, but this one's from Kyle Johan. I've been a web designer for several years now. HTML, CSS, WordPress, and JavaScript jQuery are the main tools I use. I'm interested in developing some new practical skills and thinking, and think developing a better knowledge of JavaScript might be a good path to go down. All right. I've considered learning so far. So good. We've covered that. I'm considering learning Node.js, Backbone.js, or a JavaScript MVC framework. I'm not an expert in JavaScript, but I have reasonably good skills in DOM manipulation. The application building side of JavaScript, I have minimal experience with. I was wondering if this area is the best investment for my time, or if there's a better, more practical path you could suggest. So it's kind of the classic, what should I do next question? But some of these tools we talked about, learning JavaScript, and Stephanie, you mentioned you're using Dojo and all that. Do you have any input for Kyle here?
Well, I mean, the biggest thing I would say, because I really don't know one framework from the other to say, oh yeah, you should go in this or that direction. But I think in truth, there are a lot of people that, like me, you know, use jQuery to manipulate things to a certain degree, but aren't great at JavaScript. I would say the biggest thing is get good at really writing good JavaScript. I mean, should you learn a framework? Maybe, but in truth, if you write, you know, very performant JavaScript, I would imagine that you could learn, you could work within a framework, you know, much more easily than going to the framework to learn the framework. In other words, I would learn what the framework is built on, which is JavaScript. I would get really good at performant JavaScript, then decide if there is a direction, you know, if it will teach you something to learn one of the frameworks. But I wouldn't go from jQuery to a framework, skipping the part that's all about good JavaScript.
Yeah, certainly. Cool.
Chris, what's your advice? I'm waiting for it.
Oh, just build websites.
Websites. That's right.
I liked the beginning of the question, and that here's current skill set is HTML, CSS, JavaScript, script, and then WordPress is like chucked in there too, which is kind of funny. It's not funny. It's just very normal that a lot of people they count that in their skill set. They don't say PHP. They just say WordPress. Because that's kind of the case. And it's kind of almost like if you kind of get good at building WordPress themes, it doesn't mean you're also a back-end person. It's almost like a front-end skill, just learning like a few of those PHP commands to output the right title and to you know, write the loop and get the stuff out that you want. That's mostly a front-end thing, really.
Yeah, it's templating.
Templating, right. So I like to think of that in that way. Like just because you work with WordPress doesn't necessarily make you're a back end person. Now this idea of learning Node and Backbone and all that stuff it's a little complex. I don't know that stuff that well either. It's definitely in the vein of building a one page app, like Steph said that they're building. It's kind of that real timey Ajax heavy stuff. Right. Do you have some reason to need to do that, Kyle? I, you know, not that you shouldn't learn for the sake of learning, because learning for the sake of learning is awesome, but it may, I think you might struggle a little bit with like a project that is meaningful to you to learn in those technologies. You know, it mm-hmm. seems like it's kind of a big app kind of thing. Like, are you just going to build a huge app just to learn, or could you? I mean, maybe we should just brainstorm for Kyle a little project that might be beneficial to build in Backbone. And actually, I think doesn't Adia Osmani have like a little to-do like framework thing to learn it? That might be a good place to start. But it does seem a little bit like making up a fake reason to learn something. You're not going to like dig into it as deeply as you might if you cared about what you're building.
Yeah.
Right. Like come up with a pet project that you want to build and then figure out how to do it in that thing.
Right.
That's sometimes hard.
Yeah, it is.
You know, I don't know. I look at people, you know, well, Chris, I mean, you do this and like with CodePen and stuff and Leah Veru and, you know, various people that I know that like go, oh, I have this idea. I'm going to build this thing. Maybe I was just always too busy building other people's things, because I didn't go like, I want to build a code.
It sounds like Kyle has that spare time. He's looking specifically for that idea. He's not bored necessarily, but has these skills, and that's not enough for him right now. So.
Right.
I know what you mean. Oh, though. Well.
I was going to point out, do a little product synergy here. Garen Means from last week's show, she has a book called Node for Front End Developers. It's an O'Reilly book. The ebook is $7.99. Okay. Like it's like 60 pages long. You can download it. Just get a big old taste of Node, right there. And you'd be supporting Garen by some means. So, I mean, Node's fun to take a spin on. It's like, hey, I'm renting a car for a weekend. Probably not going to own this Ferrari or what Mustang or something, but I'm just driving it around. So, you could do that. But it's really, Node is really just like server stuff that your JavaScript works on to generate pages. And then you can use Backbone inside your Node, probably. So there you go. Oh, well. Yeah, I mean, don't, if you have time, just, I would learn it. But sort of what Stephanie was saying, learn the core, just beyond DOM manipulation. That's kind of like jQuery is really easy to just like grab crap and do crap. You know, you're just like, give me these elements. Now make them all pink. You know, that's really easy and fun. But like learning what JavaScript can do, all the math functions, all the, you know, all the like base classes, I think that's really helpful. No matter where you go in life.
And find out, you know, what is Node best for? You know, there are certain things that aren't, you know, the right thing to build with Node. You know, like we're using some Node, but we're using it very specifically. And, you know, that's important. Like, it's great to know Node, but then you don't say, now I know Node, I'm going to use it for all the things, you know. You see people do that. And in fact, WordPress is a perfect example. People go, okay, I know how to do WordPress, skin it. Now I've learned how to add some new pages. And then they want to do every, even huge projects, they want to shoehorn in to using WordPress because they can sort of kind of CMS it. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
And I don't like that. Like, I think that you've got to use the right tool for the right, you know, for the right thing. And WordPress isn't really for all the things. But there we might differ, Chris. You may love it.
Well, I do love it, but you have a good point. Of course, you shouldn't shoehorn something into WordPress that doesn't belong there. But I do feel like there's an opposite side to that coin, that like you don't need to like learn, you know, if you're really good at one thing, using that tool to make you more efficient when possible.
Sure, absolutely. When you're using it for the things it should be used for.
Yeah. Right. Sure. Like if you write your blog in Node, that would be weird. Because Node it's for threading and real time and stuff like that. You don't need your blog.
I think Tab Atkins said last week he was gonna write his blog in Markdown or something. I don't know. I saw something go by on Twitter. I was like, okay. Let's just build everything out of everything.
You know, it's interesting. On that note, there is no real good Rails like blogging engine. There's Typo or something like that, but it hasn't like taken off at all.
We had a question
like
about
WordPress
that the other day, or maybe we haven't gotten to it yet. But they're kind of like, I'm thinking about doing a blog. What should I use? Like Ruby or like Ruby on Rails or like WordPress? I'm like, well, Rails isn't really a blog. I mean, there's like the classic demo of it is like, look how fast I could build a blog. But there's no like gem that's like, here's now you have a blog, go. I mean, maybe there is, like you said, I'm sure there's a few that are vying to get there, but it's mostly for building things from scratch, not providing.
Yeah, no, I just find it very interesting. You know, WordPress gets the job done a lot of the time. So anyway, well, guys, unfortunately, I have meeting alarms going off, so we're going to have to wrap up the show. But Stephanie, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me. That was a blast.
Yay.
I like to chit chat.
This was great. Yeah. Before we go, how can people get in touch with you, follow you, give you money? How does that all work?
I just posted. I'm Steph Sull on Twitter, Stefsull, which is why Chris still tries to call me Stephanie Sullivan.
I know.
I was that for so long. Only a couple of years of Ruiz. But I am Steph Sull on Twitter, and that's usually the best way to connect. And, you know, I try to pay attention. So if you at me, I will usually try to answer you and talk back and connect. And so that's usually the best way.
Great, great. Well, and thanks everyone for coming out into the chat room. We really appreciate it. Everyone who's listening at home, be sure to rate us up in iTunes, 5 stars. It's just that easy. Also, follow us on Twitter at Shop Talk Show. Buy some t-shirts, do all that. You know the drill. Chris?
ShopTalkShow.com.
Make cool things, people.
We should keep singing.
We could do a trio.